My name is Mireya Loza. It's the 9th of January, 2007. I'm here with Feliciano Ordóñez in Phoenix, Arizona. Mr. Feliciano, can you tell me a little bit about your family? When were you born and where?
I was born in 1930, June the 9th, 1930, to Felicitas and Catarino Ordóñez. Felicitas Herrera and Catarino Ordóñez. My dad was originally from the area of Mexico City, mm-hmm. Came north during the revolution when he was 13 years old, eventually ended up migrating into Texas, and growing up in the agricultural fields in Texas, meeting my mother in Texas and moving to Arizona during the era of the 20s. Mm-hmm. During the years of 1930 to 1942, when the Bracero program started, I grew up in the rural area of the West Valley in the city of Phoenix, where we had a very large agricultural community.
Did you have a lot of brothers and sisters? Was your family a large family?
I have an older brother, and I'm the second oldest of the family, but altogether we had a family of nine. Mm-hmm. We all grew up in the valley. We going to my older brother, never was able to get past the eighth grade. Mm-hmm. I was the first one to ever go to high school in Tolleson. As a matter of fact, I was one of the first half a dozen Hispanics to attend college, to attend high school in Tolleson, and one of the first Hispanics ever to go to college out of the whole area on the west side. Mm-hmm. So I was kind
were
of
your
a
parents very surprised at that?
And they were surprised when I told them that I didn't want to stay in this area, that I was going to leave. I was 18 years old, and they said, well, why are you leaving? I said, well, I'll make this one trip with you to California to pick food, as we always did every year. We were migrant farm laborers. And when we got to Fresno, California, I said, I'm leaving home. They said, why? Because I don't want to go back to that rotten Arizona, where discriminate, where I feel like a prisoner of war and people are not treated equally. I've never lived in places as bad as Arizona. Discrimination. Anyway, I headed as far away as I could with what little money I saved, and I got to Milton, Missouri. Mm-hmm. And I went to my first year of college in Missouri, where people were so different and very, I was treated very nice. From there, I was lucky that I was recruited from the railroad to go to work as a telegraph operator, because I was taking transportation and so forth. I was the first Hispanic from Chicago all the way to the West Coast to be accepted in that type of a position. So from there on, later on, I met my wife and got drafted during the Korean War. After being married 2 weeks, and came back during the Korean War and put myself back into college. I never received my full accreditation. I had 1 year in Phoenix, 1 year in Missouri, and 2 years at the University of Colorado.
What year did you get drafted?
At 1951.
1951?
1951. And so then, but from there on, I've been mostly a bilingual teacher, mm-hmm. But I've also worked with the American Indian community doing at academic upgrading and vocational counseling, this kind of stuff. But my early experience was growing up in the Tolleson area on the west side of the valley, where there in 1942, as a young boy, I remember hearing about braceros. It was the first time they ever heard about braceros. And so I could understand even at 12 years old that our workers were gone to war during World War II. And so I could understand readily that there was a need for new people to come in. And it was kind of something interesting, because growing up as an American citizen, as a, in the American community, I was always, like everyone else, trying to progress and be accepted. Mm-hmm. I don't care which way, but to be accepted. And so that was my goal. But I also was very much interested in the Bracero program, because it was something that was going to come new into our community. Mm-hmm. Not so much was I thinking about the American-speaking community, but mostly in our community. And so the first bunch of braceros that came in in my own youth, my own way of thinking things over, I used to think, I wonder what they're going to be like. Well, what I found out, that they were very humble people. Apparently, because of the lack of education and world knowledge, of course, they were very humble people and had one thing in mind. They did not see coming to the United States as the big opportunity that America offers me. They saw this like any other job contract in Mexico, if they were sent up to a mountain to clear off land, just as another contract to work and to make to earn a living where it was a little bit better than earning a living in New Mexico. But their love for their family, as I used to remember, I used to talk to some of them, their love for their family was greater than their lust for upgrading in the American economy. And so they're always talking about the day that they will be able to go back home. So there was no reason for them to think of this program in any other way. They were very, very hardworking people, very hardworking people. During that time, they worked with el cortito, as we say it in Spanish. El cortito was the small hoe, as I used. I started working when I was 6 years old in the fields, after school and before school. Yes, in order to earn a living. I can only remember the income of what we used to make from about the age of 12 years old or so. As I remember correctly, the people who were holding a full-time good job, Hispanic Americans, Mexicans as we would call them, were earning around 18 cents an hour. So I think that the braceros might have been making 9-10 cents an hour, if that much, mm-hmm. 9 to 10 cents an hour. My dad was a foreman out in the west side. He had probably, my dad used to tell me that he had 60 to 80 sometimes chicanitos, which, by the way, is kind of important at this point because the word Chicanos was not commonly used. We were all the same class of people. We were all the same color of people. We had the same black eye, dark eyes, and the same black hair. We didn't have to identify ourselves. We identified them because they were different, because they have a different background. They were the first Chicanos, not the Mexican Americans from the Civil Rights Movement. Mm-hmm. Okay. So in due time, any time my dad wanted to relate to us the difference between this group and that group, we didn't work in the same fields with them. Obviously, the bosses didn't want them to know how much we were making. So my dad used to call those los chicanos, los chicanitos. Sometimes they even say los chicanos patas rajadas, because they had huaraches. Okay, yeah. And then we were the locals, los locales. That's the identification that we had between the two workforces. So, but I think it's important at this point because this will give you a little bit of light on how the word Chicano came about. And the word Chicano came about from the word Mexicano, the X being CH in Indian, Mexicano. And obviously, it makes sense. That's where the word Chicano came from. It didn't come from chicanery. It didn't come from all the baloney that you hear today. Anyway, to make a longer story, they were very, very nice people, but they were very comical in some ways because, not understanding our community, they would try to blend in a little bit with us, although they lived separately in something like wooden barracks or small houses that the farmers provided for them. And they had a central kitchen. So they didn't have to cook for themselves. They were brought, they were furnished with a place to wash, a scrub board, una tina, as we used to call them. Mm-hmm. And they were brought into town for commodities absolutely that they needed, you know, shaving gear or whatever. And they were brought into Phoenix maybe once a month, but in the Tolleson area quite often, once a week or so, and then taken back. They didn't live amongst us. They lived like a workforce. They just lived like the old CC camps that the federal government had, and workmen's WPA and stuff like that. Anyway, I remember my aunt, who passed away naturally now, but she used to be she used to like relate little comical things, and she told us one day, she said, no, they say, when we lived, in Spanish it's more comical, but what, she said, when we lived over the close, close to it, cuando vivían cerca del brasero, dice, un día se estaba quemando la casa, dice, humo y todo, y los braceros ahí brincando up and down, they didn't know what to do, no water to put the fire, and the man came over, el güero, the boss, and he said, what? What's the matter? Nada de mara, que se quemó la casa. That's how they, nada de mara, que se quemó la casa. Anyway, little things like that were comical of the way they used to, they were so different from us. They were very excitable because they're used to a calm situation in Mexico, calm living, calm environment. And they came over here as they saw that people were more excited about things, you know, more volatile, really. Entonces, but the one thing that I remember, and this little cortito lasted a long time until Cesar Chavez came along. Mm-hmm. The cortito was about maybe 16 inches long, 17 inches long or so. And we worked mostly half-mile rows, the half-mile rows in long, or quarter-mile. And the bosses were sure, they just wanted to be sure that you didn't get up more than once or twice from this point to that point. And it was always hunched back like this. And we had to use this hand to hoe with a 12-inch space.
Your right hand.
Your right hand, a 12-inch space in order to leave one head, one little lettuce plant, so that lettuce would grow, and by the time it would grow, it would be spaced. Whereas if you leave a bunch of them, they all grow and you get no lettuce, you know. They just, so it was really a thinning process. They used to call desaijar lechuga.
Mm-hmm.
Desaijar lechuga. Okay. So consequently, that was one of the toughest jobs there were because of your back. That's why eventually a lot of the Mexicans got curvature of the back spine from being so much leaning over. We, as natives of the area, went through this. When braceros came in, they had to do the same thing. Now, there were no toilet facilities out in the farming areas, whether it be for us or for them. And at that time, women, Hispanic American women, worked in the area locales, with the locales. The Mexican braceros who worked in the next field, they worked separately. It's worked separately. And no women, of course. No women. No children. No families. But the poor woman of that day, the Mexican-American, she was a tough girl. She was, they wore the old, like the old pioneers that you see in the movies that the women wore,
mm-hmm.
when the settlers came out.
Yeah.
That's the type of headdress they wore to protect them from the sun and the dirt. And the mujeres wanted to keep their beautiful face nice, you know, from the sun. And so you could see out in the field nothing but those bonnets or whatever they call them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And in los braceros, they wore just plain clothes. You used to see some who still look very Mexican with their clothing because they did come that way. But they were treated decently. They were treated very well. They didn't blend in the community because they lived separately and were brought in as a group.
Mm-hmm.
So that but they didn't have this attitude of being there unwillingly. They didn't have this attitude of feeling discrimination because they didn't know it.
What do you mean they didn't know it?
They lived separately. They had no relation with the rest of the community to be discriminated upon.
Mm-hmm.
If they went to town, usually the foreman or the sub-foreman would go with them to the store and help them buy whatever they needed to buy, the necessities. So they really never had to have that relationship, verbal relationship, with the rest of the community to feel that discrimination. And if there was discrimination against them, they couldn't decipher it.
Mm-hmm.
See? Okay. To the American public, they were just like any other contractor. They didn't have anything to do with them, you know. You're the person that's paying to have this house built. Someone comes in with a contracting crew of six people. You don't have to be talking to all those contractors personnel. You just talk to the ones in charge, and that's it. That's the way it was for the Bracero program. So as far as relationship to the rest of the community, They virtually had none, only to the Hispanic American. Mm-hmm. And Hispanic American got along well with them, because there was no violence in those days. You could sleep outside in your little cot. We didn't have that kind of violence, and so they didn't know the community as a bad community. They would only remember, the ones that went back would only remember it as a beautiful community where everyone in the Hispanic community got along good. And so, I don't remember them ever complaining about bad treatment. I don't remember them ever complaining about the salary. I just kind of feel that the reason we were kept separate was because the owners of the farm didn't want them to know what we were making, which obviously had to be more. Now, one of the problems that came about, well, generally speaking, I think the program worked real well, because at that time, we know that there were what we call lobbyists. The word lobbyist is what has ruined not only that program, but every program thereafter. There were companies like Valley National Bank, which was one of the big, large banks in Arizona, Goodyear Farms, and companies like that that opened up during World War II because for the need for cotton and so forth. And so those companies were getting a very good deal because of the cost of labor. Very cheap cost of labor. They didn't have unions to contend with, and they found people that wanted to work picking cotton or doing anything of the kind of work for what their need was. And the Valley National Bank had hundreds and thousands of acres out in the west side. So everything was going along fine, but all of a sudden, of course, as history tells us, that the big companies, like I mentioned, Goodyear and the banks and everybody, and Boswell Farms, many of the large farms, somehow or another there was a big invention that came along called the lobbyist, and the lobbyist started lobbying all the government to keep the borders open if they even with the Bracero program, because if the Bracero program was cheap, they could even get cheaper if there was illegality. And so that was the beginning of the problem in maintaining a good farm labor support source continuation, because because of the lobbyists that started working with the big companies. So eventually, very few of the braceros were able to understand a little bit of the community after being here. I think it was about a year or two on their term. My dad used to tell me that he got a new cycle of them because they were recycled, you know. Mm-hmm. He would say, well, out of the last batch, there was a couple of them that stayed. And we know a couple of them in Tolleson right now that stayed married Mexican-American women.
Mm-hmm. So then there was dating between the braceros and local women?
Eventually. At the beginning, there wasn't. But as the program got to be more flexible, mm-hmm. and as the braceros, you know, man's a man. And he's going to look, and he's going to further his look. And so you can't stop the heart from pumping blood. And so eventually they started dating a girl that was on the other side of the field working. And those, when it came time to leave, they would get married before, and she would eventually document legalization for him.
Did this happen often?
It happened, I would say, that people that I have known, probably in my early years of Tolleson, just before leaving Tolleson in 1948, probably five or six people that I know of.
That's a lot for us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the majority did go back. They knew what their contract was here for. And those Mexican people at that time, they felt obligated to fulfill their contract. It was a different type of people, you understand? It was a different type of people. they had come from a very rigid government in Mexico, and they still held that mentality that you had to fulfill your contract as written, and that's the way it is. But a few of them did stay and became very good husbands, the ones that I know. Very good husbands and very good providers eventually, and the kids today are college graduates. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it was a success story from those. But
these men ever, do they ever participate in social events in the community, like dances or?
At the beginning, no. Because, like I said, because they were restricted to the company area. I'm still talking military now. They're restricted to the area. And because of lack of transportation. So they didn't mix too much until probably towards the end of their term of being here, they started mixing more, getting out a little bit more. They would get a ride somehow. And people received them well. They were not like we have a problem today. That's another story. You know what it is. It wasn't like that, a sense of rejection. Somehow or another, people took them into their community and treated them well. It was not like today. But
before they came, mm-hmm. I mean, as a child, I mean, you were at that point, child going into adolescence. When you heard about the braceros, was it just through word of mouth? Or did you see print material or, you know, government, media that explained what these men were doing? Were you given any explanation?
Well, keep in mind that there was no media. For example, as I was growing up, we were allowed half an hour of radio a day. Batteries is all we had for power. We didn't have lights. So when the braceros came, they were always looking for someone who had a battery radio. And to them, that was the media. As far as the Hispanic media here, there was a KOY, and they opened up in about 1936, 1939, somewhere in there. It was a half hour of Mexican music in the morning. We were lucky to have that. The Fiestas Patrias, as far as I can go and remember, far back as I can remember, we always had them, once a year. Oh, that was the event of the year for us, because my dad and my mom would load up the kids and we would go to Glendale. Glendale was one of the first little towns that received the Mexican Americans to celebrate their ancestry festival, not the Cinco de Mayo. The Cinco de Mayo is a modified 4th of July today. It was the 15th and 16th of September. Mm-hmm. And so media was nil. Mm-hmm. The media was word of mouth and La Opinión. Now, La Opinión, I mean, you probably never heard of it. It's a newspaper out of Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. It's always been, even in my day in the 30s. And the reason I say La Opinión, because it had an effect that I remember as a little boy, once in a while I would go with my dad to where the braceros were, and my dad was an avid reader. Even though he only went to the third grade in Mexico, he seemed to have a good mind intellectually, yes, naturally. He liked to read and read a lot in his own limited ability to read. He always had La Opinión newspaper in his truck, probably because he had something to do between, you know, when he was mayordomo. But once in a while, I would read it to los braceros because they couldn't read that well. And as a little boy, my dad would send me on an old 1934 Chevrolet truck that we had. He would say, "Okay, what did you learn in school today?" And I would say, "Well, I learned this and that." "Okay, now here's La Opinión. Read it in Spanish." That's how I learned Spanish. I didn't get it in bilingual education. That's how I learned Spanish. Entonces, so I would help them, a los braceros. So as far as their educational background, very little or none. Mm-hmm. And so there was no media to perturb them in any other way, to make them aware if they thought they were going to be, if they were being used. There certainly wasn't anyone telling them, "Hey, you're being used." And there certainly was no leadership.
Even La Opinión didn't write articles that you had read?
Pardon me?
Did La Opinión write articles about the braceros that you read about
the braceros? La Opinión had little articles about how well the program was working and how it was helping while our guys were away in the military. Mm-hmm. I don't remember anything negative It wasn't a negative program. Mm-hmm. It was a program that was necessary, and it's a program that worked. But like I said, the need and the greed to lower down the cost of labor killed the Bracero program. Because when the border started getting open, there was no more need for the Bracero. Because remember all the problems that an employer has when he has people, he has to document this and document that. Well, there was no need for it. When he can just get them cheaper, I just let them come in.
In the farms around here, and especially in the farm where your father worked, was there undocumented people being used in the fields?
No.
Alongside the rest?
No, no.
No?
Remember, here's another thing that you have to take into consideration. Words. In Texas, in Arizona, in California, and New Mexico kind of doesn't count too much because they're kind of like, I'm not going to say whose name's running for Canada and New Mexico, but anyway, kind of not too effective. But anyway, I lost my train of thought here for a second. The names, what did I say about the names? I was saying something about, what was our line of thought or anything before this?
The undocumented people being...
Oh, yes. Okay, yes, yes. You have to keep in mind that we didn't have mojados here. Mm-hmm. You know why? We didn't call them mojados.
Oh.
Alambristas. Mm-hmm. They were called alambristas.
So did you have alambristas working alongside?
No.
No?
No. They were strictly all braceros.
Mm-hmm.
They were all braceros. There wasn't the enticement for the alambrista to be here.
Why?
Number one, the rest of the jobs were not there for them.
Mm-hmm.
The enticement was not there. The lure was not there. The Bracero program fulfilled the need in the agricultural program.
Mm-hmm.
And there was plenty of braceros in that program, so there would be no need for them to be opening up the borders for other jobs. I don't remember of any braceros taking any other jobs other than farm labor at that time. And so in Texas, they call them mojados because of the Rio Grande. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Well, here in English, they call them border jumpers, alambristas, because of a fence.
Mm-hmm.
So in California, también I think they call them alambristas. The mojados then came later. Okay. So yes, to answer your question about whether we had illegal people, no. Not that I remember or recognized as being illegal. Not publicly known or considered to be illegal.
Mm-hmm.
The job, the need was the farm, and the need got done with the Bracero program. So that program worked good. My dad had a big time keeping track of them, is that to make sure that they fulfilled the time schedule to get so much work done. But he worked with Braceros up to about even. Well, till the end of the program.
Mm-hmm.
Really, till the end of the program. All the time he worked with Braceros. We at that time, we thought it was kind of funny just trying to say some of the things in Spanish that they said, you know.
Why?
Well, we learned Spanish by word of mouth. And so, you see, and they had the words for different things, like we used to say brecas for brakes instead of frenos for brakes, see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And we used to say crankshaft for the thing in the engine that turns like this, and they call that a cigüeñal. And I said, what the hell are you talking about, cigüeñal? Yeah. Oh, look at that. Okay, crankshaft. See what I'm saying? So those things, we kind of learned a little bit from them. Because we were kind of a strange family. We had an old-time uncle. He used to wear Teddy, the forest ranger, those round hats, you know, like they do in the...
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And he used to set us around the fireplace, and he used to say, ahora sí, ahora cuando están aquí los braceros, vamos a todos hablar un idioma diferente. Ellos hablan español, a ver qué tú hablas. Habla en inglés, en alemán, pues ahí está, que sprechen die Deutsch, para acá y tú, que en francés, que okay, para el francés, etcétera, etcétera, y tú, para el italiano. Pues. Y a mí me tocó, que me preguntó, he asked me, ¿y tú? He called me Secundino. I don't know where he got it because I don't know what Secundino meant. Y tú, Secundino. Well, I had to come up with something. They already took the Chinese, the Japanese, and all the other languages. My thought was Chinese. And so what do I come up with? And I said, Chingao. And he said, no, no, pendejo. It's a bad word. See, the little things like that came about because of the language thing that the Braceros came and sort of made us realize how little Spanish we spoke. Anyway, it's just an incidental. But basically, that the Bracero program was a good program. It was mutilated. It was misused towards the end. I'm sure some things that we don't know. But certainly, the lobbying power of the American industry, agricultural industry, got stronger and stronger, and their ability to tell the federal government, you no longer need that because we can get you a cheaper deal. Just like going to Walmart. Mm-hmm. See?
Did you ever make, during that period, close friendships with Braceros? Or were they just acquaintances, people you knew?
We really never got to that point of really being around them that much. Mm-hmm. See, because they were out living amongst themselves. And I never heard of my dad get that well, that familiar with any of them. They were content to live and let live. Mm-hmm. As far as like alcoholism, mm-hmm. You know, I don't remember them coming into town and giving any problems and getting any social problems. I really don't feel that there was anything serious in that department at all. Now, I do know a couple of ladies that married the Braceros, and one of them still lives in Tomlinson. But they married and had families and everything else, you know. So we have seen. I think it was a good program for the country. I know that the federal government is thinking about a guest worker program, but not the guest worker program. I don't think there should be a guest worker program in general. I think only the areas where we can't fill the jobs.
Mm-hmm. So. Do you remember what your first impressions were of the Braceros? You had mentioned earlier that, you know, you had remembered them wearing huaraches.
The what?
That you had remembered wearing them wearing huaraches.
Oh, the huaraches, yeah.
Yeah. Do you have, I'm just trying to understand, what was your very first impression of these men?
Well, my very first impression was these are the people that I've seen in some books in grade school. And here they are in real life, you see. And they were humble people. They're not well educated. They weren't well educated people. Mm-hmm. And so that they were hard workers. But here we always had heard about our parents. And since I never had grandpas and grandmas, because my dad left Mexico when he was 13, mm-hmm. for the revolution, it was the next best thing. Mm-hmm. The next best thing, to feel someone close to my roots. And so from that standpoint, they were well received. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were well received. I think a lot of people felt that way too. Mm-hmm. Most of your people in this area, their roots and their hereditary relates to Sonora and Sinaloa. And Chihuahua, because mm-hmm. my mother came from Chihuahua. She was 10 years old when she lost her mom and pop. We never knew grandpas and grandmas on either side. And my uncle Sylvester, Arizona's Congressional Medal of Honor winner, mm-hmm. he was 1 year old. My mother was 1 year old. He was 10 years old. I mean, she was 10 years old, and he was 1 year old. And my aunt brought him into the U.S. Mm-hmm. at that time. So we don't have any relatives on my dad's side.
Mm-hmm. And these men, do you remember what areas they came from in Mexico?
I remember that he used to tell me que era de los Llanos de Apan in el estado de Hidalgo. Mm-hmm. And that his mother was a seamstress. Mm-hmm. And that's all. He had a stepfather, and I don't think he was very happy at home, and he was glad that when the people came recruiting, they said, le dijeron, vámonos, chavalo, necesitamos un clarinista. Grabbed him with the seat of the pants and put him in the back of a horse, and there he goes.
Took him off.
And then he never returned.
And the men, the braceros, who came to this area of Phoenix, do you recall where they came from, what states they came from in Mexico?
Basically, they were from the central areas of Mexico. They were not so much from Sonora, Sinaloa, or Chihuahua. More so the central areas of Mexico. Mm-hmm. I don't know how the recruitment was done.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it was done regionally for a certain purpose or whether it was done at random.
Mm-hmm.
But the program was a good program. I'm sure that we had to have someone that knew something about Mexicans when they went down there recruiting.
Mm-hmm. And so even though they were from central areas and many of the Mexicans here were from northern states, they didn't perceive locals didn't perceive the difference between the Mexican community?
Yes, they perceived them as more genuine Mexican, naturally, because of the distance, but because there was because many of the people that were here in Arizona were from the border states, Sonora especially.
Mm-hmm.
So they didn't think of them so much as being Mexican as the one from central Mexico. See what I'm saying?
Yes.
So from that standpoint, that's the way that is.
Mm-hmm.
But the Bracero program did have an effect on the Southwest. And of course, California too, but it's a big effect on California too. But the strange thing about it is, the language. What effect their language had to do with development in Arizona and in California. I don't know why in California the development of the Bracero program didn't have an impetus into the development of the Spanish language for us.
Mm-hmm.
You see. It didn't catch on, and this is why we call them pochos. Now the people from Mexico call every one of us pochos. Why? Because they learned this from California, not because they have a distinct reason to call us pochos. As a matter of fact, see, my wife and I are entertainers. We still play music. You see up there in that
mm-hmm.
picture. She can't play guitar anymore. She has cancer. She has arthritis. She's 76. She'll be 77 here the 2nd of February, and I'll be 78 in June. And this is what we do. See?
Mm-hmm.
We still work music. We do Mexican, and we do country western, and we do contemporary, or a little bit of this, a little bit. We're just a duet. We're not an orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
But we still have at our age, the need to keep working. But I worked in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
My area, I was regional director for for a large American company. I sold heavy equipment in Mexico. I traveled from state to state. And actually the area was Mexico and Indonesia.
Mm-hmm.
But when Mexico went busted in 1981, I went busted with it. When they declared the first devaluation, the company had a lot of money invested in Mexico, and equipment hit, and we couldn't get our equipment back. So they retained me for 1 year at no pay. But at least I got a first-rated glance at how people are in Mexico.
Oh.
And I compare that to the Bracero program. Oh, it's not the same. It's absolutely not the same. Now, that might have an effect on a Bracero program.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you why, I know I don't want to take too much of your tape, but anyway. 1986, I was working at that time with the Immigration Reform Act of 1986, where we the testing
mm-hmm.
is what I was working. And
how were you working on the testing?
Well, I was working for a program that where we trained them to speak English,
mm-hmm.
ESL, and citizenship.
Mm-hmm.
And I do have a certificate from the state of from the Department of Education for teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And so at that point in 1986. I could even see at that point, I said, I analyzed that at one point, because it was such a corrupt thing, that I saw where money could buy you the test results. See? Mm-hmm. And so getting a legalization in 1986, I felt that already we're headed into problems. Mm-hmm. And I told some of my cohorts in the education department, I said, you know what? I think there's going to be another wave of this, because all this is going to do is entice other people to say, all you have to do is go over illegally, and eventually time will automatically cause us to be a sore thumb over there for so long, and so many of us, there'll be another wave. So if we can endure the time to stay over there, whether we have to be in the shadows or not, eventually they'll legalize it. And that's exactly what's happened today. And this is 1986. I swear, that's what I said, told my friend in 1986. And we're going through the same thing today. Now, had they continued to have that Bracero program longer, even then, it even changed it to a guest worker program, not even, and forget about the Bracero part, but still concentrate on the areas of need, they wouldn't have this problem today. My opinion.
Is there anything you can remember, anything else you can remember about your experience with Braceros that you haven't mentioned?
No, let's see. The only other thing that I can remember is that when you have a group of Mexicans together, there's always someone who wants to sing. And so I remember having to learn the little canciones from yesteryear, you know, that they used
to
sing.
You remember?
I wanted to hear them because, you know, I've always had that affinity towards music. And that was one way that I could tell my daddy, you know, what song they sing, Dad? Oh, they sing this old song and that song, and you know, Asunan or whatever the songs, the old songs, you know, that time.
So they did sing a lot of the old songs.
Oh, they sang. Yeah, they used to sing while they were working. Mm-hmm. I remember used to going out to my dad, and we were picking strawberries, and at that time, and he there was the field where they worked, and then. They were singing while they were just like anyone else, you know. If you're in Tennessee and you work in some agricultural field over there, you're going to be singing the Tennessee Waltz, you know.
Was there ever a moment where locals would go and sing with them or play music for them?
No.
Did they bring instruments?
They had no instruments.
Mm-hmm.
No, had no instruments. Eventually, probably some of them would finagle an instrument here or there, you know. And so, old guitars, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so that I remember seeing one that had an old beat-up guitar, and I never forgot that old guitar, to the point that it even inspired me to start a song that I'm writing called Mi Guitarra Vieja. And it says, Mi guitarra vieja está silencia, ya no puede ni sonar. ¿Será que sus cuerdas viejas ya no pueden ni vibrar? Con muchas ansias yo le toco, para ver si me responde. Pero ya sus tonos viejos se me esconden no sé dónde. ¡Ah, qué mi guitarra vieja! Tan bonito que sonaba. Y cuando yo la abrazaba, parece que hasta me hablaba. And so forth and so forth. See, I'm finishing up the song now, but those are some of the words. Now I always remember that when I saw that old guitar, crack guitar, and thing wouldn't play anymore.
I never imagined that they actually sang in the fields.
Yeah. Yeah, those are little memories, that, you know, growing up memories. I was más andariego than the rest of my family. My older brother, he was very straight-laced, never cussed, never. Of course, in those days, nobody ever cussed.
Mm-hmm.
That's another thing. I never heard them cuss.
No.
They were more, they had more home training than by far than the ones from Mexico today. There was more respect by far. And so, as far as their personal attitude, their personal comportment, the way they handled themselves, they were gentlemen. The ones that I knew,
mm-hmm.
The ones that I saw, and my dad never, I never ever heard him say anything negative about, no, aquel this and aquel that, you know. No. Never. But they maintain that level of gratitude and respect. They were glad to have the opportunity. It wasn't something that they had to grab. It was something that was handed to them. Okay. Now basically, that's the way I see the Bracero program, the way I see how it was effective, the way I see how it worked, the way I see that if they ever have any idea of starting a guest worker program, they better get some technical assistance. Because that's what happened all through our history since the Bracero program. The lack of technical assistance, the lack of knowledge of the mentality difference between the Hispanic American and the Mexican national. We don't understand them, they don't understand us. I've spent many years getting with as many years of ESL, you know. And social programs. I'm the sponsor, the founder of the Southwest Hispanic Cultural Association. Mostly my work is on the west side. We spent $12,000 on the mariachi program. We have a ballet folklorico right now ongoing. We have on about once a month, we set up cultural respect education for kids at like in Tolleson or like at the governor's office. She has a big meeting hall, and in different kinds of locations all through the valley. And so I'm still involved with it in trying to get our kids to learn about yesteryear, what they can pick up, you know, and how to avoid some of the pitfalls.
Well, thank you very much. This has been a really good interview.
I hope que no salí como me decía mi mamá. My mom, she died in 1987, and me say, oh, pues tú puro habla y habla y habla y habla y habla. No te canses de hablar.
No, pero eso es bueno para nosotros. Oh. Muchísimas gracias.
Okay. Well, I hope I gave you
this
what you needed.
This was actually really productive. A lot of the stories that you told really resonate with some of our images.
Uh-huh.
And so it's...